Hi everyone, my name is Joe Turner and I'm the PhD scholar on the debriefs theme of the Ningle Outlet project. I'm sorry I can't be there today, but I have submitted my PhD and returned to the UK to start a new position here. However, I wanted to talk to you today about one of the chapters of my PhD, which revolves around distribution modelling of Ningaloo mesophotic or deep reef communities. So, mesophotic ecosystems are generally defined as occurring from approximately 30 metres to the bottom of the photic zone. This suggests as a potential refuge for shallow water communities, as they may be more sheltered from stresses such as increased temperature and anthropogenic impacts. However, highly diverse and endemic communities can be present at mesophotic depths. So regardless of whether these ecosystems act as a refugia or not, they need to be protected in their own right to safeguard global biodiversity. So distribution models aim to identify relationships between the species and environmental factors. And this is based largely around niche theory. So the fundamental niche is the environmental conditions where a species will persist. For example, you may have a coral, and then you may have depth and light on the x and y axis. This just shows the values in these variables where that species will occur. So where it's maybe not too deep, not too shallow, not too bright, and not too dark. You then have the realized niche, which is where a species occurs following competitive interactions. So this is where it may be excluded from a portion of its fundamental niche in a certain area. So the aim of models is to predict the fundamental niche when where a species is likely to occur in an area based upon the sample points and predictors that you have. So the study was conducted in Ningaloo in the northern areas of the park. And to do that, the methods we used include bathymetric surveys to map the shape and depth of the seafloor using multi-beam sonar equipment. This sends out multiple sound waves that bounce off the seafloor and return to the ship, where the delay between sending and receiving a signal gives a measure of depth, and at the same time, backscatter data provides an indicator of how hard the seafloor is. 3D models of the seafloor are then created, and topographic derivatives are then calculated, such as slope and rugosity. However, acoustic data doesn't provide a direct observation of the seabed, and we need to use visual methods, such as towed video and the Starbeg AUV, to confirm what is there. Modelling techniques use statistical techniques to identify patterns and make predictions. The ground truth data then acts as training data based upon the presence or absence of target organisms, where we use three taxonomic groups: corals, macroalgae, and sponges. Each point then has associated values of each predictor variable found at that location. I won't go into details of each of the modelling techniques due to time constraints, but essentially they use different methods and algorithms to spit out a prediction of whether a species is present or not. So for this study, I used six different modelling methods to compare using simple and complex methods, as well as an ensemble. Ensemble techniques essentially utilise the outputs from multiple models to combine predictions, usually based upon a weighted averaging approach. I also wanted to investigate the effect of changing the grid size used, which represents the size of the squares on the map. The top images shows the depth layer at 10 meter grid size, while the bottom shows a 250 meter grid size. So you can see how patterns change as you course in the data set. To create the models, you need to subset the data, as you don't want to use all of your data to train your model, as you need to be able to validate the outputs. We used a cross-validation technique, where a portion of the data is withheld each training run. And we repeated this 10 times for each, resulting in 50 models for each taxonomic group at each grid size for each method, which came to over 1,000 models produced. Furthermore, I then used a spatially independent dataset from the southernmost area, as this obtains a more reliable measure of model accuracy. So model accuracy essentially is the power of model to represent the world, where the evaluation data set, which is not used to train the model, is used to calculate a variety of metrics. These include things such as sensitivity, which is the true positive rate, for example, where a map predicts coral is present and it is coral, and specificity, which is the true negative rate, where a map may predict no coral and there isn't any coral. And the true skill statistic and the AUC, the area under the curve, which combine both of these metrics. So AUC ranges from 0.5, which is the dashed line, which is completely random, so you might as well flip a coin to decide if a species is present or not, up to 1, which is the perfect fit. So here the blue line has relatively poor AUC, and this is due to the model being unable to really differentiate between presences and absences. However, the red line shows a much better fit, where as you can see, the absences and the presences are more defined. So the results of this study, for each taxonomic group, you can see the different modelling methods on the y on the x-axis and the accuracy metrics on the y-axis. Colour relates to the grid size that was used. So as you can see, we're getting relatively high AUC values, which shows the models are performing quite well. Furthermore, for corals, you can see that 10-meter grid size models were working the best, which are the green boxes, having the highest values across all, regardless of technique. However, for macroalgae and sponges, you can see that 250-meter grid size models were working better, and that single classifiers can be highly variable between the model runs. Here's where ensembles can be good, as you obviously remove this variability and can end up making good predictions, where the ensemble technique was the most accurate at each of the grid sizes used, and even performed better than some of the 250-meter grid sizes, which were potentially more optimal, such as the 10-meter ones for the macroalgae performing well. Some of the example outputs are shown here, where you have maps produced for the ensemble techniques for corals in the Helby Banks area. Here you can see spatial degradation, where while some general patterns are preserved, you can be a lot less precise at these coarser grid sizes, where corals are much better predicted using 10-meter grid sizes. So just to summarize, assessing multiple species or assemblages at different scales will affect organisms in different ways. For corals, fine scale work better, where in the area, corals are confined to depths of less than 40 meters and show a strong association with fine-scale features in geomorphology and high-relief reef areas, indicating a narrow niche. However, macroalgae and sponges were more broad taxonomic groups with a variety of functional traits, including organisms of different niche requirements, where some like sand and gravel, whereas others like rock. So it's harder to fit some of these topographical variables. However, ensemble methods were extremely useful, as they allow the most important relationships to be highlighted, resulting in good predictions. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks to all of these people for their help throughout the project.